So today I am going back to the beginning of quantum mechanics, when Einstein introduced the notion of now what we call as phonon, an elementary quanta in solid state system. The first quanta was photon, light. I think the second quanta was phonon, and it came from Einstein's attempt to understand low temperature specific heat of solids. So it was an experimental compulsion that when you go to low temperatures, there was strong deviation from classical theory of specific heat, namely Dulong-Petit's law. So Einstein wanted to understand it the way Planck wanted to understand strong deviation of thermal distribution from black body radiation. So as always, Einstein introduced the simplest of postulates and got maximum mileage out of it. And what did he do? So, yeah, what I plan to do is I will do the well-known Einstein oscillator theory of solids for specific heat. Then I will make a quantum jump to a big leap to Majorana fermions, again coming from a simple solid, namely some hydrogen bonded ferroelectrics. So, I will use Einstein's philosophy of writing down the simplest effective theory. Now, it turns out in this case the effective theory have interaction among these oscillators. So, that leads to profound consequences including Majorana fermions. So, that is what I plan to do today, and if I finish it in time I will go to Bose-Einstein condensation. So, if you think about a solid, you can think about sodium chloride. Sodium chloride is an ionic solid. Essentially, there is a transfer of electron from sodium to chlorine atom. So, they form a sodium chloride lattice and atoms vibrate, and there is a spontaneous symmetry breaking of translation invariance. Similarly, if we take diamond, another solid, it forms a diamond lattice and the translation symmetry is broken. So, there are corresponding, we all appreciate that there are corresponding Goldstone modes which are lattice vibrations. So, if you look at the, so these are all things that you know very well. If you look at the phonon spectrum as a function of momentum, you typically find a linear sound wave. Now, there are three types of sound wave. One is longitudinal vibration, another is transverse vibration. So, you can say two polarization and one longitudinal. Typically, they have different energies. All of them have different velocities. Now, and then there are other modes depending on the number of units which are called optical phonons. So, you have a band of energies over which these phonon oscillators live. This is something that you do in harmonic theory of solids. So, if we look at the density of states of the number of modes in small frequency interval, typically the density of states looks like this. There is some quadratic behavior as a function of omega at zero frequency. Then there are singularities called Van Gogh singularities reflecting the underlying periodic structure. So, what did Einstein do? Einstein did not know all these things. So, he said to him, if you look at a solid like diamond, a carbon atom is held by some kind of forces by neighbors. So, it is sitting in a self-consistent potential well. He approximated that potential well by a harmonic oscillator. So, that is the simplest effective theory that Einstein could think of. Now, in the modern language, you will say what Einstein did was to have the density of all the frequencies are around one frequency omega naught. So, every atom is sitting in a potential well like this, and then there are quantized energy levels. It is amazing that Einstein wrote this paper in 1907, well before Schrodinger's approach theory came. So, Einstein and others used to understand energy spectrum of harmonic oscillators using Bohr-Sommerfeld quantization condition. So, that will tell you that the energy eigenvalues are half plus n . So, this is the input in Einstein's model, the simplest you can imagine. And then you may remember, if you look at the specific heat of, for example, diamond, at low temperature it has some behavior, and then constant specific heat at constant volume reaches the so-called Dulong-Petit law constant value above about 800 Kelvin. So there is a strong deviation from Dulong-Petit's law, like, and Einstein was able to explain this for diamond. And then his characteristic frequency in terms of temperature was about 1000 Kelvin. So he made a beautiful fit. It's not exact fit. And also very soon Einstein realized that he is missing what we call as Goldstone modes and a continuum of band. So he, Einstein, before Debye's theory, said there should be some band of modes, but I am making an approximation, there is only one frequency. But with that, he began the field of solid state physics, solid state lattice dynamics and so on. Now we know how to do it, because we know, suppose you want to study the lattice dynamics of rare gas solids like argon. Yes?
When you say he realized he was missing Goldstone modes,
yeah,
was that through comparison with an experiment or?
Yes. So, yeah. So when you take into account Goldstone mode, the low temperature behavior becomes different. It becomes a power law. In fact, maybe I will give it as an exercise in the. So, what Einstein got was, when you, it's very easy to, if I derive it, I will make some mistakes, but let me rewrite. I have it somewhere. Because this is just correction of oscillator, it's easy to evaluate the internal energy and free energy as a function of temperature. Then you take the internal energy and take the derivative of u with respect to t, what you get is exponential of something like this. This is a way that you get with some coefficients here. So specifically it becomes exponentially small. Now this, he assumes one frequency. If you take Debye frequency or if you take the collective mode, you will get some power law behavior. The fact is specific heat will vanish at low temperature, but much more slowly than exponential form. So in fact, there are later efforts by people to correct Einstein's solid in taking it on Goldstone modes and so on. Yeah. So the qualitative feature will be like this. Specific heat will vanish at low at zero temperature, but it will vanish very fast in the case of Einstein. In the case of Debye and others, it will vanish slowly. And in fact, this is a whole industry of lattice dynamics people have done in great detail in the past. So now what do we do in the modern time? We know that there is a two-body potential if you consider a rare gas solid like argon. The potential due to van der Waals interaction, there is some long-distance attraction. And then at short distance, this is V of R between two atoms as a function of separation R. At short distance, you have, because of Pauli principle, hardcore repulsion, and then there is some attraction which vanishes. So if you have a collection of atoms, what do you do? Many of these solids are self-bound. That is, you don't need any external pressure to crystallize them. And in which case, you take the forget about kinetic energy to begin with, take the classical potential energy and then minimize it, and you get some periodic pattern of the localization of atoms. Even that is not an obvious thing, that the ground state does correspond to a periodic potential, periodic arrangement of atoms. In fact, there is a very nice discussion about it in the book Anderson's Basic Notions in Condensed Matter Physics. So once we know that atoms arrange themselves into a periodic crystal like FCC lattice or hexagonal HCP lattice and so on, what do? You expand the potential energy about this minimum and then write it in terms of small displacements. And then that's a harmonic approximation. And then in the normal example that is given in one dimension, you have a collection of atoms connected by a spring, and they solve the problem. This is something that he must have solved in great detail in the past. So you get the famous dispersion omega as a function of momentum, a wave vector of the phonon excitation. So it's a sign of A is the lattice parameter, Q is the wave vector, and then some force constant divided by mass of the atom. So this is a dispersion, well-known dispersion for monoatomic harmonic chain. Now, if you calculate the specific heat of this, it is already non-trivial. Now, here we assume that these atoms move and they do not jump over the other, and they remain basically trapped between the two atoms. That need not be, that is not necessarily true when you go to higher dimension. For example, you could imagine large excursions in which two atoms get exchanged, and those things are not captured in the standard harmonic theory of solids. One has to go beyond that. In fact, a famous and recent example of where that necessity comes is so-called super solid helium 4. This was a very active field for a while, and then unfortunately the activity died down because there was some experimental controversy. So now in a good solid like diamond, the atoms are, a carbon atom is in its home site, it is very unlikely it will get displaced itself due to zero point fluctuation and thermal vibration, go to long distances. It is undergoing harmonic oscillation because the spring constants are very high, so they are very stiff solids. Whereas in some loosely bound atom like hydrogen, helium 4 solid, they may even exchange places, there can be quantum mechanical exchanges. So those things become much harder to describe within the context of this kind of models. So I will not go into that now. Now I will from here make a jump to so called hydrogen bonded ferroelectrics. There what you have is you have typically heavy atoms like oxygen, phosphorus and so on, potassium, and then you have also hydrogen atom embedded there. Now these hydrogen atoms being light, their frequencies are very high, the scales of frequencies are very high, and they behave like an independent subsystem in the background of heavy atoms. So I will try to do Einstein's solid approach, then I will go one step further and take into account unharmonic nature of the potential in which these hydrogen atoms are sitting, and also interaction between neighboring hydrogen atoms. So this will already lead to a very beautiful example of what is called a quantum Ising model, where in one dimension, where you can get Majorana fermion as an emergent excitation. So many of these modern things that is happening will be illustrated through this very simple example by taking one step from what Einstein did. That is what I plan to do now. So you all know what a ferroelectric material is, that is like you have a ferromagnet where there is spontaneous magnetization pointing in some direction defined by crystalline anisotropy and so on. For example, all the spins can be up or all the spins can be down, there will be thermal and quantum fluctuations. So this is the spontaneous symmetry breaking associated with ferromagnetism. In the same way, there are materials, a famous example is barium titanate. Which is called a perovskite. I will draw the perovskite structure for you very soon. It's a perovskite material. Below about 100 Kelvin, there is a spontaneous electric polarization. So this is called ferroelectricity. So if you look at the electrical susceptibility, like the Curie susceptibility diverges in the case of ferromagnet, electrical susceptibility diverges as you approach the Curie temperature. So that is a phenomenon of ferroelectricity, well known to you. And you also have in real systems, you have ferroelectric domains where polarization is up here and down here, and there are domain walls in which it vanishes and so on. So the usual phenomenology that happens in magnetism happens here also. Then it turns out there are two kinds of ferroelectric. This is called a displacive ferroelectricity. I will not go into the details because most of the polarization comes from displacement of electronic clouds. So let me give you some simple feeling for it. The perovskite structure is this. Imagine a simple cube. And the barium atoms are sitting here in the corner of the cube. Then put oxygen at the face of the cube, 6 atoms. I'm missing one. Yeah. Now put titanium at the center. So barium here, then this repeats. So this is called a perovskite structure. It's a very important structure because this is called a cubic perovskite. A layered perovskite is what high temperature cuprate superconductors are. Lanthanum copper oxide is a layered perovskite. There are this octahedra of oxygen. At the center there is a copper. Here you have barium and titanium and oxygen. So at low temperature what happens is these electron clouds here shift to preferentially in one of the directions, either along the x direction or y direction or z direction cooperatively, and that leads to some net polarization, which is the phenomenon of ferroelectricity. And it is very interesting that this system has a cousin, strontium titanate. So if you look at the periodic table, barium is below in the column, barium is below strontium and strontium is lighter. And quantum chemistry is roughly the same because if you look at it, the way things are, each oxygen grabs 2 electrons, so it becomes 6 minus, and barium donates 2 electrons, it becomes 2 plus, and titanium donates 4 electrons, it becomes 4 plus. So titanium 4 plus has closed shell, barium 2 plus has closed shell and oxygen has, so it's a happy insulator with some few electron volt gap, band gap, and so is strontium titanate. But however, it never becomes ferroelectric. What happens is the third quantum fluctuations that as people don't understand even now very quantitatively destroy ferroelectricity and pushes the transition temperature down to zero temperature. So this is called quantum paraelectric, quantum and in fact, this material, because of its quantum paraelectric electricity and quantum fluctuations of dipole moment, electrical dipole moment, plays a very important role in modern nano devices. For example, if you take some iron selenide material and put it on top of strontium titanate, it becomes 100 Kelvin superconductor. Still, we don't understand the mechanism of that. Similarly, you put graphene on top of strontium titanate, the property of graphene changes. Because a fluctuating dipole moment or quantum fluctuating dipole moments causes a lot of screening and changes of physics. So it's a very important material in material science and nanoscience now. There is also basic issues involved in how quantum fluctuations destroy a finite temperature phase transition. So this I have no time to go into, but I will just point out. So this is what I plan to do. As I go along, I will point to the quantumness of matter, you know, the how important quantum fluctuation, that's what I will keep doing. So this is also quantum mechanical, but still it can be described in terms of classical theory of ferroelectricity. Now there is also something called polarization theory of ferroelectricity, theory of ferroelectricity, developed by various people like Resta, Vanderbilt and so on, which I will indicate later in the context of the Berry phase. Because it turns out many of these properties are fundamentally quantum mechanical of filled bands. Because normally we think that whenever you have a filled band, quantum mechanics is not that important. You have a big gap and classical physics will work well. That is not true. Because a filled band can get polarized and various things can happen, including non-trivial Berry curvature and we'll talk about it later. So that is one thing that we'll see later. So in this background now, I'm going to discuss another well-known ferroelectric called potassium dihydrogen phosphate. I do not know how many of you have heard about KDP. Okay, that means you haven't had solid state physics course from Kittel's book, because Kittel discusses it in, because many of the things I'm talking about, Kittel has a discussion. Of course, a boring discussion, but it's there. So KDP, it is potassium dihydrogen phosphate. So now, as I said, here you can imagine ionic picture and understand. Here again, you can similarly think about ionic picture. Potassium is a very generous atom. It can happily donate one electron. And then it turns out phosphorus for strong chemical bonding happily accepts this. So this is roughly the status. And then what you have is you have a tetrahedra of phosphorus and oxygen atom. Now, we know in quantum chemistry that NH3 is a very stable molecule, ammonia. And if you look at the periodic table, nitrogen is just above phosphorus. So nitrogen has 3 electrons in the 2p shell, carbon has 2 electrons in the 2p shell. So phosphorus has 3 electrons in the 3p shell. So it's just one below in the periodic table. However, because the energy levels are other levels are coming down, phosphorus can have very different bonding in comparison to NH3. For example, you know, if you look at bonding of nitrogen with oxygen, we have NO2, we have NO and so on, various things are there. It's unlike CH4 or CO2, you don't have very strong bonding. So similar thing happens here. If you do the quantum chemistry carefully, what you will find is there is an oxygen, hydrogen gets attached here, hydrogen gets attached, and there is a double bond with oxygen, and then one extra electron gets attached here. So this is the structure of phosphate group, and that is not important for us. So what you have is it's a network of this tetrahedral unit connected by weak hydrogen bond. Now, what is a hydrogen bond? You may remember from your example from what you learned about water. Water is one of the most mysterious, according to some people, quantum liquid. We drink water, we are all, you know, 60% of our body is water. But still, we don't understand a lot of water, including why the density is least at 4 Kelvin and anomalous expansion of water and various things we have no good understanding. Even though it's a very active field, because of the light hydrogen atom that is present there. Let me give this famous example of, suppose I take 3 water molecules. So, now, typically what you do is when you have water molecule, you say that there is a 2 hydrogen atom. Then at the back of your mind, you have 2 electron in the one of the sp3 hybrids of oxygen. So it's 2 electrons are pointing out. So this is what gives dipole moment to the water. So it's a neutral system on the whole. Now, one electron from hydrogen atom strongly hybridizes with the 2p sigma orbital, similarly here. Okay. Now, so there are these things like this. Let me put one of the hydrogen atom here. Then I am left with one hydrogen. This can be a 2e electron, and this can be 2 electron. And I am left with one hydrogen atom. For example, it can be here. Okay. Now, we say that, this is a hydrogen atom. This is oxygen, We say that this hydrogen atom belongs to this oxygen, this hydrogen atom belongs to this. But It turns out hydrogen will be very happy to belong to this water molecule also. Then if you transfer this hydrogen alone here, then this water molecule will lose an electron, because hydrogen will take an electron with it, or it will change the charge character, so that is expensive. So imagine a situation in which the hydrogens are pushed the opposite. This hydrogen moves here, this hydrogen. So it is an equivalent energy configuration. So there can be quantum fluctuation between these two configurations. That is what a hydrogen bond is. The hydrogen can be bonded to one of the oxygen or the oxygen other thing. So it has to happen collectively in order to minimize the energy. I will come to this in detail. So this is the hydrogen bond. Like if you take water and look at water, water forms clusters of three water molecules, four water molecules, sometimes hexameres, six water molecules. And they are, these hydrogens are undergoing quantum, that is because if you think about a potential well seen by the hydrogen, it is like this. So if the hydrogen is here, there is a probability the wave function can tunnel to this and back and forth. And of course, it is determined by the environment. Yes.
Could you give some picture of how in an experiment you really see those clusters? How do you observe that three molecules are kind of
bound? Oh, spectroscopically.
It's through spectroscopy.
Yeah, exactly. So the, in fact, the typical frequency ranges are hundreds of centimeter inverse. So you see a lot of spectra, in fact, a lot of lines. The spectrum of water clusters is very rich. And then they have resolved it and found out some of them correspond to these tunneling states, bonding state and antibonding state. So I can explain it later. So yeah, experimentally, it's a very active field in the field of chemistry, quantum chemistry. Hydrogen bond, because it's so fundamental in biology, if you look at DNA, there is so much hydrogen bonding, and in proteins, there is hydrogen bonding. It's everywhere, and in water, it's full of hydrogen bonding. And how they manifest, okay, there are, you know, very interesting quantum features of water, which are still being explored, and the system I'm taking is much simpler compared to water. The only common feature is there is a hydrogen bond. So you can say that this, I have a cluster like this, another phosphorus atom. Now this hydrogen can be bonded to this, so it can collect, and now when you do that, it will cost some energy, which is what I will write down. So I will not go into the detail, but I will just right now go to the model directly. I have given you some motivation that this hydrogen, unlike in the case of Einstein solid, is not sitting in a symmetric potential well. That's the most important point. For Einstein, he considered diamond. There is only one carbon atom, all the neighbors are carbon atom. So roughly, the carbon atom is symmetric, sitting in a harmonic potential well. Whereas in the case of hydrogen, because of this hydrogen bonding nature, it can be happy here or it can be happy here. In between, it's not happy. So there is a potential felt by the hydrogen atom, which is the effective potential for hydrogen atom. So when you do modeling, you imagine that there is an effective potential for hydrogen atom, and then hydrogens from neighboring tetrahedra, they interact, and we will write down a model for it. Now, what did Einstein do? He took a harmonic oscillator and he knew that the energies are equispaced. He solved the problem exactly. But now, this is where Hilbert space sculpting comes. So if I look at this double well potential, we don't even have analytic solution for the eigenfunctions or eigenvalue. But however, we know physically what is going on. If I go to very high energy, the energy levels will be almost equispaced, because the small blip here will not affect the high energy eigenstates. Whereas when you come to low energies, if they imagine a potential which is very high, then I can imagine a Gaussian state sitting in here. This will tunnel here, so they will hybridize and they will form what is called bonding and antibonding state. So the lowest energy state will be something like this. The next excited state will be with a node. So you can hybridize this state and this state with plus and minus, and that will lead to this. So the energy level scheme, so I am being extremely qualitative, but That's the way the modeling is done, because you don't want to be too precise, you don't want to carry too much load. So harmonic oscillator has equispaced energy level. Here, they are not equispaced. Firstly, there is a small splitting in the lowest ground state, and then there are other states which are higher in energy. So I'm going to focus on this as far as low temperature physics is concerned. I'm dealing with physics at 100 Kelvin or 200 Kelvin. So these are all maybe sometimes 500 Kelvin away in terms of energy. So I can ignore all these things. So this is where a qubit comes. That is, I have two levels which are very important, and I ignore all the other levels. So that's where the Hilbert space of this is just two. So unlike Einstein, we don't carry a big baggage. We just carry two Hilbert states from every hydrogen atom in its well. So this is the simplest picture that you can imagine. So very often, all the progress in condensed matter physics when it comes from extracting such features and writing down the minimal and simplest model. Like Einstein said, model can be simple, not simpler. So this is simple, not simpler. If you throw this, then nothing is there. So the minimal model is this. So this essentially tells you that a proton, if I observe it, is undergoing quantum fluctuations. And it is actually, if you want to write it in terms of potential, it is sitting in an anharmonic oscillator potential like this. And then for the energy scales or temperature scales of my interest, I focus on the lowest to nearly degenerate state. The degeneracy is lifted up because of tunneling. I will come to it in detail. Okay. So this is as far as hydrogen atom in one of the bond is concerned. Now let me come to this trimer and focus on, suppose this hydrogen atom moves here. Then what you find is this water molecule will have three hydrogen atoms. So that's expensive. So I have to encode it in terms of my energy function. So this is a happy configuration. This is a happy configuration. Anything in between where will involve three hydrogen atoms sticking to one oxygen molecule atom. So that's an energetically unfavorable. So I'm going to model it in the following way.
I have a question.
Sorry?
When you say happy configuration, what does it mean? Like, how do you know if it's a happy configuration?
Yeah, right. How do I know it's a happy? Because now if I look at this, there is oxygen here. There are two hydrogen atoms attached to oxygen. That's water molecule. So is here. So it's a happy configuration. Now, when this hydrogen jumps to this water molecule and wants to form a bond, then I have three hydrogen atoms. So it's not a happy configuration in terms of energy. It's a high energy state. So I have to put it in the Hamiltonian as a term, which is what I'm going to do. I mean, it'll become clear now. Yeah.
So it's kind of organizational, but so we're trying to make an analogy about KDP.
Yeah.
Which has hydrogen bonding between its phosphate groups. Do we, like, when we're talking about thinking about, like, the bonding and antibonding orbitals is applicable to this water system, like, is everything that we're talking about here with the water system applicable to KDP?
Some aspects of, exactly. The hydrogen bonding aspect is applicable to KDP and water system.
But geometrically, where there's three water molecules, because they're, like, because they have this, like...
Yes. So, in fact, you are right, here there are... But as far as this hydrogen bond is concerned, locally, the hydrogen is sitting in a double well potential. That's all. That is my abstraction.
Okay.
So, in fact, this this model was written down by Dejean, a Nobel laureate. So, he got Nobel Prize for soft condensed matter physics and so on. But he's also a quantum guy. He wrote down a model for hydrogen bonded ferroelectrics. And he did it for 3-dimension and 2-dimension. And I'm doing it for 1-dimension because it's solvable and it brings in completely new physics.
Okay. Thank you.
How did you obtain the potential from the complete region?
It just an assumption, because when I say there is an oxygen and there is an oxygen, this hydrogen is strongly bonded to this oxygen. And if I look at the energy configuration, for example, if there is no hydrogen here, I know that in the case of oxygen, there is a protruding electron cloud carrying two electrons. You remember, in oxygen, I should go back to how H2O is formed. So oxygen has four electrons in the p shell. Okay, so the 2s and 2p electrons form what are called sp3 hybrids. So there are four of them pointing along the corners of the tetrahedra. Now, this fellow and this fellow, I take them just to be two of the 2p3 bonds, which contains two electrons. So it's not bonded to anything. So it's called a lone pair. There is a lone pair here. Here you are left with one electron in this and one electron here, and that is bonded with hydrogen here. So this is a hydrogen bond. So a water molecule has two lone pairs and two hydrogen bonds, two hydrogen atoms attached to them. That is the basic quantum chemistry of water molecule. Is that clear? It's very important to remember, because if you take carbon atom, things are very different. For example, nitrogen, let me talk about nitrogen. Nitrogen has one less electron. So, three hydrogen can bond to nitrogen, that is NH3. So, if you look at nitrogen, it will look like there is a lone pair, 2e electron, and there is a hydrogen. This is, by the way, ammonia molecule is also very quantum mechanical. You know that this ammonia can undergo quantum mechanical tunneling from this to another configuration. That is the physics of ammonia Maser. If say there is interest, we can discuss it later. So it goes back to the standard quantum chemistry that oxygen has two missing electrons in the p shell. So those missing electrons, or the lone electron in the p shell, form strong bond with two hydrogen, and the other two are filled with two electrons, so they are lone pairs. Now, when I bring in another water molecule, because if in terms of electron counting, this also has two electrons, but there is a hydrogen atom also, because oxygen had one electron, hydrogen gave two electrons, so they formed a bond. So, there is a two electron bond here, but then there is a proton here. So, when I bring in another water molecule, this proton can tunnel to this and be happily caged here, and that is where this double well potential shape comes. As I am just considering locally, I am forgetting about what happens to the neighbors, how unhappy or happy the neighbors are. I will come to that later. Any question? Yeah, please.
It's because I don't know a lot of condensed matter or chemistry, so I think that I'm a little lost with that picture.
Wonderful, it's very important. So this is, see, for example, how do you get diamond? Let's go back to diamond. See, Pauling, this was discovered by Pauling many, many decades ago, said, if you look at carbon, there are four electrons in the second shell. Two electrons in the 2s shell and two electrons in the 2p shells. And the number of states are four. So what he said was, I can form appropriate linear combination of s and p orbitals. So you remember, s orbital is spherically symmetric and the p orbital is like this, plus minus. Now when you combine them, they start looking like this, like a dumbbell pointing in the corners of an imaginary tetrahedra. So that's called sp3 hybridization. So what, I didn't do anything, I'm just forming degenerate states into new combinations to take advantage of bonding. So once I have this, I can have a similarly neighboring carbon atom here, it can point its orbital here, these two can hybridize and two electrons can beautifully sit in a bonding state. Similarly, in the next three arms. So that's how diamond has a local tetrahedral structure. And if you take graphene, which I will come to later, it goes to what is called sp2 bonding. That's something amazing about carbon. Carbon is happy to form sp3 bonding or sp2 bonding. In the sp2 bonding, what you do is you leave one of the orbitals, namely 2pz, untouched, and form linear combinations of 2s and 2px and 2py orbital, and then you get these Benz-like orbitals, which is what leads to honeycomb lattice structure. And you are left with one fellow which is sticking out. So all this quantum chemistry tells that they are all nearly degenerate in terms of energy. That's why carbon is what it is. It forms diamond, it forms carbon nanotubes, it can form graphene and so on. So is that clear now about water?
Yeah.
So water molecule has two, what did I call? Two hydrogen atoms, and then two lone pairs. By the way, if you go to chlorine or fluorine, which is next to, what is next to oxygen in the periodic table? Fluorine or chlorine?
Fluorine.
Fluorine, okay. So then fluorine has one less electron in the p orbital. So that's why you can form beautiful HCl. So the lone electron can form a strong bond with chlorine, and you are left with three lone pairs. So 7 plus 1 electron, 8 electron. Okay. And HCl has its own, you know, property, acidicity, and that's a different world altogether. It's amazing how a small combination makes all the difference. It becomes acid, one becomes base, and so on. Okay, good. Now, I have told you that, like Einstein, he didn't worry about the environment. He said that the environment gives me some effective potential for an atom to live. That was a harmonic potential, and he got away with it, and he got all the qualitative features right. So it's an Einstein's effective model or effective theory. It can't be, for example, if I want to study melting of diamond, I cannot use Einstein's theory. It's good as far as low temperature specificity is concerned. This is again something very important in condensed matter, quantum matter physics. We devise models. These models have the range of validity. Very often fight comes in the field because people use it beyond the range of validity. So there is a lot of arguments very often about the range of validity and so on. Okay. Now this is as far as one hydrogen. So what I have done is I have considered hydrogen subsystem in KDP, and it looks like Einstein solid, except that the hydrogen atom is sitting in double well potential. And then double well potential gives me an advantage in the sense I can isolate out two lowest levels which are nearby, and other levels are farther away. So I can just focus on these. And they correspond in real space. The hydrogen, for example, you know, there is another, suppose there is a hydrogen atom here, proton here. The proton being here will be sitting in this well, proton being here will sit in this well. Okay. Now, this is what I have done. Now, the next thing is, I want to know how it influences the neighbors, how the neighbors become happy or unhappy. I'm going to model it. Now, when you have two levels, it looks like a Pauli spin operator. That is, you can use Pauli spin operators to represent it. So what I'm going to do is, I'm going to represent the state of the electron being here as S is Z equal to 1, an electron be here. But the actual state will be a linear combination of that two. So that means if I want to represent the tunneling between the two, I will have to invoke a tunnel splitting and write it like this. So what does this term tells me? This term tells me that there is a matrix element for this spin to flip. That is, the spin is pointing in this direction, it can flip here. Similarly, there is a matrix element for this spin to go this. So that is nothing but delta x. So it's a pseudo spin representation of two levels which are interactive, which is two tunneling states, can go back and forth. Okay? So, this is one part of the Hamiltonian which represents the two states that the proton can be. If I diagonalize it, I will find the ground state to be and the excited state to be. That's it. Because this is nothing but in this language, if I represent in terms of matrix, it looks like delta is half diagonal element. And then when I diagonalize it, I will get these linear combinations with appropriate energy, which is related to delta. So this is the one side problem. Now I am going to this, the next aspect. Suppose I have, I am simplifying the world, think further. Suppose I have oxygen atoms lay on a chain. So there is one hydrogen atom which is attached to this one hydrogen. So it's a happy situation. Now suppose I move this hydrogen atom here. Then you can imagine there is an electrostatic repulsion between the two. Because it's an unhappy state because I have an extra hydrogen atom pushed to me. So energy goes up. Similarly, if I do this, I push this hydrogen atom here, push this hydrogen atom here, then I am without any hydrogen atom. So energy has to go up. So this I want to model it. So the simple way, please think about it, is to model is that if this is site I minus j. It means what is the happy situation is this. One hydrogen atom here, one hydrogen atom here, or another happy situation is this. That is, the spins are either both down or both up. And that is what minimizes this energy, right? Is it clear? So what I did, I have done it. What I have done is, I have simply said that two neighboring hydrogen atoms tend to, each hydrogen atom wants to have only one hydrogen attached to it, each oxygen atom. And that is satisfy this condition. The energy will go up otherwise. So that means I have a very simple Hamiltonian for a chain of hydrogen atoms. Is this clear? This is something very important. Yeah.
Sorry, backing up just a sec. So I see why this is like a good thing to think of as a spin system, but why in particular is that Hamiltonian that is delta of SC plus plus SC minus, or delta times SC plus plus SC minus?
Oh, because I want to put a process in which this electron will be able to spontaneously tunnel to the, from left to right and right to left. So that is satisfied by this.
And why wouldn't it be a minus? Why wouldn't it be a minus?
Oh, minus will correspond to another convention, then the, yeah, so if I want this to be the ground state, the convention is minus.
But
if this is a ground state, yeah, both are, so it can be SY, SX or SY, yeah, depending on what is the ground state. So this is the simplest Hamiltonian going beyond Einstein after nearly 100 years. Now it turns out this Hamiltonian is remarkable. You all know about Onsager's solution of two-dimensional Ising model, celebrated solution. And if you know the spectrum of this Hamiltonian, you can write down Onsager's exact solution. So this is again something very important. Do not know if you have come across transfer matrix theory of Ising model, thermodynamics of Ising model. That is, Onsager's partition function of two-dimensional Ising model can be written in terms of transfer matrices, and the corresponding operator, transfer operator, are this Hamiltonian. So solving a one-dimensional quantum mechanical chain problem is equivalent to solving a two-dimensional classical statistical mechanics problem. This is something, if you are not familiar with, please read about it. By the way, there are very nice, I found, you know, in addition to books and so on, there's a very nice article by, where is it? Ah, by McGreevy. You all know the name. So he has a some 19 lectures in some notes. Where do quantum field theories come from? John McGreevy. Is that correct? Is that the way I pronounce the name? John McGreevy. So he does ADS, CFT, and a variety of things. So he discusses many of these things, not hydrogen bonded ferrolates, but Ising model in a transverse field, duality, and various things in great detail. So you may like enjoy. In 19 lectures, he does various things. There is also another nice article about this, because now I will discuss next spontaneous symmetry breaking in this problem by Loic Rademacher. He was a postdoc here many years ago. So he has a SciPost physics lecture notes, SciPost. So he has something in detail about various, many of these things. So this is a, these are all the two things which are modern, but there are many more available in the internet. Okay. So now I want to understand the many body Eigen spectrum of this Hamiltonian and possibly statistical mechanics and various things. So this is a one dimensional problem. Suppose I don't have delta. What is this? This is Ising model in one dimension. You must have all solved it by transfer matrix method, which is just by diagonalizing a 2 by 2 matrix. Okay. Now I have a transverse, and it turns out this makes the problem difficult to solve the conventional method. This is where some method technique called Jordan-Wigner transformation becomes helpful, and Emily will talk to you that method in detail, and Majorana-Fermion emergence will, you will see very beautifully in that approach. So Einstein would not have suspected emergence of Majorana-Fermion if you take one step in his model. Okay. Now few more statements about it. This is Ising model in a transverse field. Again, because of this beautiful, elegant simplicity of this model, this model enjoys something called a duality. Those of you who have studied Ising model phase transition in 2D, namely Ansager's Ising model, you may have heard about Kramer's Vanier duality. You can make a dual transformation and make the high temperature phase equivalent to low temperature phase. Now, the same duality applies here, because this is a problem that is a transfer matrix of 2D classical Ising model. I will not go into the detail. Maybe Emily will talk to you later about it in the tutorials. You can define new set of variables, that is Si, Z, and Si plus 1. That is, this is a product of two spins of two neighboring sites. Now, let me define a new variable as a product, like a bond variable. Then it turns out, once you write down a bond variable, this becomes a pseudo-spin bond variable. So there is a, so I will not go into the details, I'll just indicate the beautiful connection. This problem that's a symbol they have. Okay, you have this problem. This can be transformed to I make some mistakes. So in the dual variable, this becomes 1 over G. So you notice G has become 1 over G, but the other ways, instead of SIX, I have a tau AX, then I have again a bond variable instead of new variable. So the connection is this Si Z Si plus 1 is defined as and you can do the now once you do this you can do derive this. Now what is remarkable is since they are the same Hamiltonian there should be something about special when g equal to 1 that is called the critical point. Now let me say come to critical point. Now if I take this Hamiltonian and try to understand what is the nature of the ground state, I can look at extremes and yes.
This transformation between the s and the tau.
Yeah.
Is it equivalent to an RG step? Is it equivalent to zooming out of the system?
No, this is because it's preserving the number of degrees of freedom the same. It's a dual transformation, it's not an RG yeah, it's a good thought that I'm integrating over variables and defining a new collective variable. While I'm defining, converting two spins into one spin, but one spin becomes two spin. So the Hamiltonian have identical number of variables, and there is a dual relation between. So it's a duality, and you are saying whether it's related to RG. My immediate answer is no, but one has to think about it. Okay, so now we can look at two limits very easily. Suppose G equal to 0, then this is a famous Ising model, ferromagnetic Ising model. The ground state corresponds to all spins up and all spins down. And spectrum is very simple. So if I flip a spin, it costs an energy 2J because I'm making two neighbors unhappy. So if flip two spins who are neighbors, again it is 2J and so on. So I have domain wall excitations or single spin flip excitations, a whole spectrum of excitations for this. And I can do statistical mechanics for this also, straightforward way, because it's one dimension. Now, when suppose I put j equal to 0 and then I have just finite g, then this is again a simple problem because it's an Ising spin in a magnetic field. The magnetic field is pointing in the x direction. So all the spins in the ground should be pointing in the x direction. So two extremes are clear. Now they start fighting in between. So you can heuristically say that if you look at the lowest energy excitation, the gap as a function of g, suppose g is 0, there is a gap. The gap corresponds to 2j. I flip one spin in a ferromagnet. It makes my left neighbor unhappy and right neighbor unhappy. So there's 2j. Similarly, when g is very large, you can measure it in some unit. Everything will point in one direction. There is a gap. If I'm flipping the spin, will correspond to flipping the spin along the x direction in the opposite direction. Again, it's a ferromagnet pointing in the x direction. I flip one spin, I get some energy. Okay. I can normalize it with respect to some j. But what is interesting is, and also there is something special about g equal to 1. We saw here. So what you find is, the energy gap gradually, because in a sense, when you introduce g, you are introducing quantum fluctuations. You are allowing the spin to flux spontaneously through S plus S minus process, allowing quantum fluctuation. So it reduces a gap, you can imagine. Similarly, when you are here, when g is very large, this allows quantum fluctuations in the other direction. So gaps reduce and the gap exactly vanishes. So it becomes gapless. And in the modern terminology, this is called a quantum critical point. So you have a quantum system parameterized by ratio j by g. And when you tune j by g, the system goes through a quantum phase transition in which it has one phase and, in fact, topologically different phases. And there is a critical point. And you heard a talk in your previous lectures on ADS-CFT correspondence, right? In fact, the point here is supposed to exemplify ADS-CFT correspondence beautifully through what is called Mera tensor network. This is a great achievement of Jeffrey Vidal, who was a former faculty here. Now he's at Google. So he's responsible for this maximal multi-scale entanglement renormalization. So he writes down a wave function for this critical point as a tensor network, as a tree, which has exactly ADS-CFT form. In fact, this was brought out by, do you remember the name who was here? He's at Maryland now. So he showed the ADS-CFT correspondence is connected to TensorNet Mera, Brian Swingle. It's a beautiful paper by So I'm happy to connect it to the previous lecture. That is, ADS-CFT, you come in one way, you come through supersymmetry, brain, strings, and so on. But there is a simple way of coming through Ising model in transverse field. Idea is very simple. Yes?
The coupling is G over G, or sorry, G over J, right? Not
yeah.
Just G. Okay.
Oh, sorry. So, yeah, yeah, correct. J over G, yeah. Sorry. Dimensionless, yeah.
When we say that the two faces are topologically different, what does that mean?
Yeah, I will explain it when I come to there. Yeah, I will, that's a, that, for example, in this side, if you have open chain, you will have a Majorana zero mode at the end of the chains. Here, there won't be any Majorana zero mode. I will come to it. So there is a topological characterization of it as given by Kitaev. By the way, many of these things, it's a beautiful lecture notes by Chris Lawman and Kitaev. These are, I think, Lejeune's lectures. Chris was participating, so he took down beautiful notes, and it's all, you can find it in the archive. Many of all these discussions about Majorana fermion. So, one of the focus there is this Ising model in transverse field, because as Emily will show you, this can be related to Kitaev wire, where there is a superconducting wire. So there is a, through a Jordan-Wigner transformation. Originally, I misestimated my time. I thought I'd be able to do that, but I would hardly come to there. Okay, so this is something, yes.
And I have another question about the
duality.
Like, this is a symmetry of the physical system. Like, we are able to write two different Hamiltonians, two different, for the same system, what kind of symmetry is the one that relates the one?
Yeah, so there is supposed to be, yeah, I will again discuss it in the next class since you asked this question. Now you can ask the question, what is the symmetry of this Ising model transfer? It turns out there is a symmetry which involves like a string operator. So that commutes to the Hamiltonian. That also signifies the topology. I will do that because I'm not prepared to do that clearly now. Okay, this is one thing. Now let me close by saying, how many of you have heard about E8 group? Oh my God, you're all experts, I should learn from you. Do you know the connection of this to E8 group, what I'm talking about? Okay, you should ask Zomolodchikov. He's one of the DVRCs. Zomolodchikov, about 10, 15 years ago, he conjectured that if we take this model and silently add a term, why? So, you have an Ising model in transverse field, add a small field in the y direction. When you do the mathematics, this corresponds to solving Ising model, Hansager's Ising model in the presence of magnetic field, which is not solvable analytically. But however, Zomolodchikov conjectured that if you sit at this point, which is related to a conformal field theory with central charge and so on, with some particular central charge, he said, this will open up a gap, and there will be mass spectrum of excitations which for some mysterious reasons follow E8 group. In fact, I can't even define what an E8 group is called. Supposed to be called exceptional group, one of the hardest group. And there is a paper in the archive, very beautiful title, Experimental Realization of E8 Group in Condensed Matter Physics. Because they have taken, so the prediction of is very simple, that is, if you look at the excitation spectrum of this problem, energy excitation looks like this. So there are fermionic modes which starts at zero energy and then go up like this. So this is a gap, this is energy as a function of momentum. Now when you apply this field, what will happen is it will produce a gap and there will be several new branches that occur. One of the prediction was the distance between the two neighboring branches, the ratio of these two will be a golden mean. And experimentally, they found it in this neutron scattering, as approximately. You know what a golden mean is, some square root of 5 minus 2 or something like that. So this is where amazing that, you know, the Hilbert space, you know, what did we do? We went to one corner of Hilbert space guided by this Hamiltonian. That's a ground state. Now we are moving around. Then if you want to move away from here, in that Hilbert space, suddenly E-H symmetry crops up. So since many of you have heard about E-H symmetry, it appears in heterostatic sink theory and various places, you may enjoy reading about this. So E-H Zomologico is the name. You can, there are good articles on it. Okay, I think I'll stop here today. Yeah.
When G equals to 0,
yeah.
The golden Hamiltonian.
Sorry?
The dual Hamiltonian.
Yeah, you normalize it properly. So when J is 0.
G is 0.
So now I can take my Hamiltonian and divide it by J and call it as dimensionless. Then I have only one parameter, namely G, which goes from 0 to infinity.
Yes.
Yeah. So when it is infinity, that means I have a very strong polarizing field. So I come away from infinity. So I have a very large field. Then my energy scale is J. So there is a continuity all the way up here. So you are worried about the infinite point.
Like when G equals to 0, the original Hamiltonian took up just the eigenfunction.
No, it's just not even Ising model. It's just a spin, free spin in a magnetic field.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
But at the same time, the dual Hamiltonian when G equals to 0, how can I see how we get the dual to be just a free spin?
Sorry, please repeat the question.
When G equals to 0,
yes.
Can I see the dual Hamiltonian, the first one goes to the
end? Oh, this one.
Yes.
Okay, so I will not go to G equals to 0, I will keep it as small as possible, the way when G becomes larger. Yeah, that's not a problem. Yeah.
I have a question about the water example.
Yeah.
Like, when we write that potential, we are considering like a periodic potential. Like, what is, I understand the picture of the one water molecule now.
Exactly.
But how are one molecule like interacting with the next one?
Exactly, that's through the SZ term. So it's an approximation. So normally it's a very complex system, depends on the positions of the water molecules and so on. I am idealizing into some periodic arrangement of water molecule or periodic arrangement of phosphate group.
In one dimension.
In one dimension. In fact, there is something called CCM dihydrogen phosphate where it is really one dimensional. Sorry, I should have mentioned it. So these are all idealization to capture some of this physics. In reality, you'll have to put a lot of other corrections and so on. But that's the power of these effective models. It captures some essential physics, which normally is, you know, clouded by other realities.
And this model is able to describe like physics of what? Because for me, like realizing a solid, like a crystal in that way, like it's
so it's able to describe ferroelectricity, even quantitatively. You can locate transition temperature within 10% accuracy, and you can do neutron scattering experiment. You can find out dynamic fluctuations. So this model is non-trivial model. It's trivial in the sense doesn't has all the features of experiment, but still it takes you to a right corner in the Hilbert space and gives you many insights.
Okay.